You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We can also be heard on the web. We're very grateful to be getting between 1,500 to 1,800 downloads on iTunes. And you can visit our website, Sita Media Inc., for past shows and this show as well. I have an action-packed show today. My co-host Ellen Little is not here today, so I will be heating up the airwaves with my friend Joe Shim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Joe is my friend, and we're also together. We're members of the League of Women Voters.
We are.
Are we members? Is that what
we're
are?
Members.
We're
yes.
members, all right.
Yes.
We're members
of a lot
of things.
Space Coast League of Women Voters.
Yeah, yeah. We're members of a lot of things. It's amazing how you meet somebody and you hit it off because for some reason, you think the same way, and it's wonderful. And she also has a Caribbean connection. Her husband is Jamaican.
Right.
And he likes,
and
curry.
I
and
just
he likes
came,
curry chicken.
And I just came back from Cuba.
Right. And so and we also have Lisa Soto, Dr. Lisa Soto, who is the Executive Director of the Marine Resource Council right here in Melbourne, Florida. Welcome.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You look so summery.
Well,
you look like you're enjoying summer.
Coming.
Yeah, and we'll be talking later with Lisa about all
prepared.
The stuff we can be doing in the summer months to help our Indian River Lagoon. And everyone who knows Lisa, they know how tirelessly she works with the Marine Resource Council ever since their launch in 1988, right? It was Marine Resource Council was launched in 1988.
Well, we started in 1983 with FIT, and we became our own nonprofit organization in 1991.
Oh, you
and
did?
Left FIT to become our own entity.
And you guys have evolved into a multifaceted organization, doing so many good things for our community and bringing so much education and awareness to the Indian River Lagoon and what we all can do to take personal responsibility, not just for our families, but for our lagoon.
That's right. Yeah, yes. It's great to be part of a community that's working so hard to save our estuary.
It is. And so, but Joe and I are going to start talking a little bit before. We also have a call-in guest that's going to try to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I recently attended a retreat in Port St. Lucie, that area.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I went to something called The Essence of a Woman, and I was so grateful that I attended. I took the day off to attend that retreat, and I met this wonderful lady named Janet Garcia. And I have to tell my listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, sometimes all you need is another person to get inside your inner self and teach you how to get rid of excess baggage. And if you're holding on to something from the past, how to let it go. Like they say, like Frozen. And that person was Janet Garcia for me. And the other 10 ladies in the room, people were getting divorced. People had problems with their children and in-laws and siblings and co-workers. And Janet had this way of finding the inner self of us and herself and telling us her story, her upbringing. And all the women in the room shared their story as well. And when we left, we bonded. Just for the mere simple fact that we were able to let something go that was bothering us. And I thought it would be nice for her to call into the show and share that with our listeners as well. Instead of paying the $200 for the day, the listeners could get it for free. So it'd be kind of good.
That's
wonderful.
But before she calls in, I wanted to talk to Joe a little bit about what's happening in Tallahassee. I know that they just wrapped up the legislative session, and you and I and all our friends were working closely with the League of Women Voters on the Healthcare Committee. And we were so interested in what's happening with Medicaid expansion, as well as reproductive rights. So give us a little update while we're waiting to talk to Janet, if she gets time to call in from her busy practice.
Okay, so I'm going to start with what the league's doing. So Medicaid expansion actually wasn't legislation that went through the legislature this time because we failed to get it through. And of course, the expansion of Medicaid is part of the Affordable Care Act. And it's that part that will provide provide funding for people that cannot afford to get insurance, actually as part of the insurance marketplace, as part of the Affordable Care Act. So the expansion was put in place to cover everybody else, and the states got to choose whether they wanted to expand Medicaid or not. And unfortunately, so far in the state of Florida, we're now one of only 14 states that hasn't taken those expansion dollars from the federal government. Now, we've paid our taxes to have those dollars and to fund people
so we
that
want
need
it.
Health insurance.
It's our money.
Yes.
We want
yes.
it.
Yeah. We said take the money for a long time, but it seems to fall on deaf ears. But we're actually turning down $5 billion per year that would help to pay for healthcare expenses for people who haven't been able to afford health insurance. And who are these people? These are friends and family. These are people actually who are running businesses, because if you start a business, one of the first things you may be let go to be able to afford to run a business is your health insurance. It's also people like and many low-paid people in Florida are agricultural workers, are people in hospitality, are people who are
caregivers.
Cutting your hair,
people
caregivers
who caregivers
in nursing homes
yes.
who cannot get any insurance, and that money is there for them. So now the only thing that is left is for us to do a
petition drive.
A petition drive.
Easy
to get the words
yes,
out.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I'm so passionate about this.
You know, we've had extensive conversations about this, and the truth of the matter is, they're not lazy people sitting at home.
No,
they're
most people are working.
Lowly paid wages workers, caregivers, hairdressers, business owners, people who have lost a spouse, people who are just starting out in life, and I've noticed that we've had numerous shows about the homeless situation and affordable rent and stuff. You tell me, and I said this when I was running for office as well, how does a person making between $13 to $15 an hour afford to pay for rent or mortgage, put food on the table, buy health insurance, car insurance, medical insurance, put food on the table, and pay for medical bills? It's impossible. Because then you have to choose, are you going to buy your asthma medication, or are you going to buy food for your family? Now, are there things that fall through the cracks? Yeah. But the majority of people who need Medicaid are not what people think it is.
They're not lazy people.
Why do we always have to talk about the lazy? Not everyone is lazy. Are some falling through the cracks here?
And, there's I've experienced talking to people. There's many people in that 62 to 65 age group who've had to stop working because they've been disabled, or they have some they actually have some medical conditions, and they haven't reached the age where they can get Medicare, and so they are stuck without insurance either. And what happens, they end up having to go to the emergency room for care, and that's the most expensive way we can treat people, and especially it's a very expensive way to try and do primary care, and they do not get proper care, continuous care. Very often they're running
short of
medication.
It's like hit or miss, because a friend of mine was talking to me, and we said, in effect, we're penalizing people for working, because oftentimes the non-working people are the ones who do not qualify for Medicaid. Like, if you're working, you're penalized because you don't get it, because you may make $50 more.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it makes no sense why legislators in Tallahassee does not put themselves in the shoes of someone who is making less than the average pay that we pay in Florida.
Right. And what
we're asking to increase the minimum wage,
yes,
which would help. But at the same time, I know nursing assistants who make about $11 an hour, $12 an hour. And through no fault of their own, they're single moms. So how can you afford to live? You can't. You need Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And sometimes they'll cover the children with kid care, but the parents have no insurance.
Exactly. And then we know that when parents have insurance, children are more likely to be covered, and they're available to do the job because they're getting, they are actually getting proper medical care, so they can work better and work more consistently.
What are the reasoning for our state not expanded Medicaid? What do you hear? I mean, you've been to Tallahassee a few times. You've sat down with people and spoken with a few of the state reps and stuff. What are some of the reasons that they give why they will not expand Medicaid expansion for those amongst us who actually need it?
Okay, so what I hear a lot from different people is Medicaid is too big a part of the budget, and that we need to reduce health expenses. And what they're not telling you is there's two things that don't come out with that. Firstly, that Medicaid is actually a state-federal program. So when they say that, yes, it's a big part of the budget, but they include the federal part in that. So the state isn't paying as much. And in fact, the state is only paying 39% of that. The other very important thing is that the expansion under the Affordable Care Act is that the state actually pays 90%. Sorry, the federal government pays 90%. The state only pays 10%. And there were 3 years we could have had it for free at 100%, and we didn't take the expansion.
Right. I don't understand those who are against the ACA. I mean, we are going to have to take baby steps. I know I was one of those people that actually, I really believed we would get Medicare for All or some sort of a single payer system. But I've shifted my mind a little bit about that. I do believe what we ought to do is probably first give an option, get a healthcare option, that if somebody wants to buy into Medicare, they could, you know, for somebody like who's 55.
Right.
Because we get Medicare at 65.
Yes.
And I think our nation is going to move further away from Medicare for All, but they probably would move closer to keeping the ACA, fixing it, not nixing it, and maybe adding on a public option. I think so. But people don't understand that the people who actually qualify for Medicaid are actually low-income children, pregnant women, the elderly, and the disabled. And, of course, people making low wages.
Right.
That's the bulk of it right there.
And basically, you have to be actually earning very little money to even qualify. In Florida, it's 35% of the federal poverty level. Which
so, if so, Joe, before we chat with Janet Garcia, if somebody wanted to sign one of the petitions to expand Medicaid, how do they get a hold of you or someone who's actually helping?
Well, I would say that just actually, if you go to any of the big events that are on, there will always be people there with petitions. I mean, I think, or they could call me. My number's 321-431-9932, or contact the League of Women Voters. If you have a group that you would like to learn more about Medicaid expansion and have us there to help you sign petitions, we will come to your event. But at all the major events, you will find people. And I would say there's many other organizations that are collecting them. And I would actually, Brevard has made a stellar effort in this. And I would thank all those other people who are collecting, because I know that we have collected a lot and it's really made a big impact. And
you're educating people as you go along,
right,
as well, because for every petition that's signed and people ask you, well, what is this about, you're able to tell them it's not fair that someone, you know, I've heard people say, well, I'm better off not working if I want to get Medicaid. And that's silly.
Yes.
You should be able to work, contribute to our society, whether you volunteer or whether you earn wages, and you should be able to get some help for healthcare.
Definitely.
If you can't afford insurance. Insurance, I mean, private insurance is pretty high. I know when I quit my job at the nursing home and I wanted to get private insurance for medical, dental, and vision for a single, well, married female who's 55, that's me, Sita Begee, host of this show, it was almost $700 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's what some people make every 2 weeks. So how can you buy insurance? It's difficult. Well, anyway, thank you, Joe. And I see our phone lines are lit up, and we have Janet Garcia, who is the CEO and founder of Inspiring Radiance, on the phone with us. So good morning, good afternoon, Janet, and thanks for taking the time out of your busy practice to call in on our show.
Thank you, Sita. It's such a pleasure to be on the show.
Oh, my gosh. I still remember your beautiful face and your gorgeous white outfit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So I love, you know, when we met, I was just telling Joe and Lisa Soto, and I forgot to tell the audience that my cousin Cynthia is here also from Toronto, and she did not want to take a mic, but we got her to sit with us. So you want to say hello? Feel free.
Hello.
Yeah, she's shy. She's waving. So I was trying to tell him about how you talk to us about women being the creators of life and how you made us feel so worthy and you helped us to let go of so many things that a lot of us had bottled up inside. And I know the time, we only have like 15 minutes, but I wanted you to guide our audience and join with us on this journey, this healing journey, and teach them how to create that life that you gave to all of us that day. So where do you want to start?
So I will start. I will just talk a little bit about kind of what I primarily do with women. I mean, it's not just women that need this type of healing, but, you know, that is what my practice focuses on. And the reality is that each and every one of us, you know, we have this divine feminine energy within us. And so many times, based on our life experiences, based on different things that have happened, you know, throughout our life, we kind of, in a sense, disconnect from that. And so what I teach women is that you have to create a life that you absolutely love and really learn to love the goddess within. That's kind of the core of it all.
And we all goddesses. We all felt absolutely like goddesses there. And you know, you made us feel so empowered, and you just helped all of us to find that true self-worth that we had through everything you taught us that day.
Thank you. Yes. No, that is my goal. That is my goal in life, for each and every woman to feel, you know, worthy and just good enough. Because, you know, when we look at the statistics that, you know, over 80% of women are struggling with self-worth, self-esteem issues, you know, and even our young girls, you know, are struggling with that. Young girls who are not willing to participate in like PE or anything that showcases their bodies, for example, you know, swim or anything like that. You know, that's ridiculous. And so that is kind of where my passion lies, is really, you know, everyone has to feel worthy and good enough. And that's what I want for the whole world.
So what made you decide to help all of us find a goddess within?
So I myself struggled. I had some traumatic events in my life. And as a young adolescent, I really struggled with my self-worth, my self-value. And then as I became a young adult, you know, again, my life felt like it was just falling apart. Nothing seemed to, you know, really fulfill me and make me feel happy. Like on the outside looking in, it looked like I had the perfect life, but inside I was really struggling. And so I took a year for myself to say that, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power to really find my own value, my self-worth, you know, versus that looking at it from someone else or trying to have someone else, in a sense, fill my cup. I looked to just fill my own cup. And when I did that, when I was able to truly love and accept myself as I was in this moment, you know, not when I reached perfection, not when I reached a certain goal, but as I was in this moment, everything fell into place. You know, my marriage flourished, my career flourished, you know, my relationship with my children flourished. And I just felt like for the first time in my life, I just felt whole and complete just because that's how I felt, nothing to do with anyone else.
Yeah.
And so I knew that that was something that I, you know, passionately wanted to share with the world.
So why do you think, Janet, women just don't take the time anymore to take care of themselves? What is it? What is the message? How can we get more people to say, I say the day has 24 hours and I give myself permission to take 1 hour to walk on a treadmill. And I do it every single day of my life, no matter rain or shine, I'll take an umbrella, but I am at that gym. Or if I go on a vacation, I'll make sure that I have a hotel that has a gym. And if there's no gym, I'll walk on the road. But I say to myself, out of 24 hours, Sita, you need an hour for yourself. Whether you walk like a snail or a crab, or you run like Hazley Crawford in Trinidad, doesn't matter. You're going to, you know. So what is it that's stopping so many women from saying, this is for me and I don't care what else is happening, but I'm going to do it?
You know, I think that a big piece of it is the guilt. It's that guilt of, you know, we were raised as young girls, and as a society, we teach women that, you know, we're the nurturers. We're the one who takes care of everyone else first. And so I think that just life is busy. You know, everyone is so busy that by the time you finish that to-do list, there may not even be time on that day. You're so wiped out and tired to even make any time for yourself. So I think that's the biggest thing that I see with women. It's that guilt of, you know, I have so many things to do that I should be doing versus, you know, focusing on, you know, taking that little bit of time, like you're saying. That's, I love that, you know, taking that time to an hour a day. You know, I do 15 minutes when I walk in the door, and of course I kind of spread mine out throughout the day, but I take 15 minutes. When I walk in the door, the 15 minutes that I walk in are mine. I go meditate, I may go and do a little bit of yoga, whatever I choose to do, but nobody bothers me for 15 minutes. It's like a ground rule. And I've seen that, you know, my own children have been able to implement that as well. You know, my daughter will sometimes say when people are walking in asking her to do something, she will say, you know what, it's my 15 minutes, I just got in. So I love that, you know, modeling that for my child as well.
Right. And we talked about, when we came to the retreat, we talked about, you know, self-love and self-care. And you also talked about how women should embrace their insecurities. So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit, how do we embrace our insecurities and make it part of us?
Absolutely. Sometimes our insecurities stem from, you know, our trauma. It stems from, you know, negative events that have happened in our life. And so one of the biggest ways to truly be able to embrace your insecurities is confronting your past. You know, I hear so many times, I hear people say that they don't want to look to their past. You know, they want to leave that behind them. But here's the reality. When we do not look at our past, when we do not truly heal our past wounds, we can't move forward. It's like a bungee cord wrapped around your legs. You can only go so far forward, and then you're sprung right back to where you started. And so embracing your insecurities is part of that. It's really healing those past wounds, because all of those past wounds and all of that past trauma actually plays an aspect on why you're currently struggling with, you know, maybe the negative thoughts, the body image struggles, all of that plays into that.
Right. And how to move forward, because so many moms struggle with raising children. And, you know, when you give birth to a child, it doesn't come with a handbook. Nobody has the right answers how to raise a kid. It's actually you learn from your community, your siblings, your cousins, your friends, your relatives. It's a learning experience. Mothers, fathers. I know in my culture, my mother didn't have all the answers. She believed in discipline in children. She believed in spanking children. And so I'm proud to say I did once in a while. I sure did. I mean, but the thing is, it's not always the right thing to do. So we all, I think, learn from each other as time goes by what to do and what not to do. And we can't let the events of the past interfere with our future. We do grow and we do learn from other people. And that's what I like about you, is you shared your past with us and made us feel as though if we were feeling guilty about something, we should let it go, and how to let it go as well. You also developed something called Shine. So I want you to talk to us about Shine, S-H-I-N-E. I love that.
Yes. So the Shine model is something that I developed because as I was, you know, starting my practice and really trying to find kind of a model that fit what I was looking to do with women, there really wasn't anything out there. So I developed the Shine model, and basically what that stands for is the S stands for self-care, and it's really teaching women how to self-care in a way that feels good to them. You know, you can't tell somebody, oh, you should be doing this each and every day, because if that's not going to work for them, you know, they're not going to do it. So it's really about developing a plan on what you enjoy doing, taking care of yourself, and that's kind of how we develop that. The H is really learning how to honor yourself. You know, there's so many times that maybe you did things that you didn't feel that you were, that you loved, honored, and respected yourself. And it's about really learning to let go of those and forgiving all of those moments, and really learning the skills on how to honor yourself. The I stands for, you know, really being inspired to kind of reach your goals. You know, so many times as women, we play small. And I teach women to, you know, to go out there and make their dreams come true, because life is too short to just, you know, survive. Life, you know, it's about, you know, creating a life that you absolutely love. I always use the term, you know, create a life that sets your soul on fire, because that's what I want for everybody. The N is really learning how to nurture yourself. At the retreat, I did a lot of different things to help, you know, women learn to nurture themselves. But the reality is that, you know, like you said, most moms are doing the best they can. You know, parents are doing the best they can. And sometimes they may not provide the nurturance and the love that the child truly needs, or the way that the child needs it. And so as a woman, I teach women how to nurture themselves, how to nurture that little girl within them so that she can heal and really grow up. And then the last piece of that is the E, the learn to embrace your insecurities, you know, really learn to heal all of those past wounds so that you can truly embrace your insecurities and really, you know that, you know, the reality is that none of us are perfect. And when you learn to love yourself as you are in the moment, everything falls into place in your life, and it is an absolutely life-changing experience.
Well, you know, Jo is shaking her head a lot. Any chance that you're going to be having one of those retreats here in Melbourne, Florida, so that people could discover the goddess within?
Because I definitely need to discover that.
We need it in Melbourne because, you know, so many people here, it's like a rat race. You see the road rage. You see people, you know, accumulating wealth and then they ignore their health. You see people trying to be part and parcel of everything and join every group in town. But you need that person like Janet Garcia, mental health therapist and everything else to come here and help us. So Jo has something to add.
I was just wondering if you have any programs for adolescents, since you seem to be featuring that. And also, I was just wondering if you've thought about how the media impacts women and their self-image.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to first what Sita was saying. So I am planning on really expanding this. This past retreat was my first retreat to really just kind of get it out there, get the feel out there. And then I am planning on doing several events a year, ideally. And with the adolescents, I'm working on right now a program. I'm trying to do an online program only because that kind of seems where all of our adolescents are. I do want to do a live event for adolescents, but what has been my experience in the past is that they don't generate a large group of adolescents. And so I'm not sure exactly what that is. It could be that, you know, that everybody's just busy. It could be parents can't bring them. I'm not sure. But I know not just myself, but kind of other mental health professionals in the area, like they put on big events and not a lot of people show up for these events.
Yeah. And, we have two minutes left, and I just want to tell our listeners we're speaking with Janet Garcia, who is the CEO and founder of Inspire and Radiance LLC. And you know what I like about you, and it resonates with so many women. We are the creators of life. Of course, we also have a supreme being that I believe in as well. I do have faith, family, friends, food, and a little forgiveness in my background here. But if a woman does not feel worthy or good enough, that has ripple effects of generations to come, because people carry that hurt over and over, and it passes on from one generation to the next. With the remaining 2 minutes, I just want you to give us your website, and if you could quickly tell us how to break that cycle from generation to generation of hurt.
Absolutely. So my website is www.janetgarcialcsw.com, and I'll just spell it out, www.janetgarcialcsw.com. And how to break that generational wound, I mean, really look, the biggest piece is looking at your own trauma. You have to do the work. If you do not do the work, that wound is going to be passed down, like you said, from generation to generation. We have those generational wounds, in particular the mother wound. When we struggle with our worthiness, our self-esteem, you know, it's not the words that we say, but it's the actions that we do. So if our daughter sees us, you know, constantly dieting, if our daughter sees us constantly, you know, saying negative thoughts to herself or saying negative things to ourselves, you know what? Unconsciously, she's going to be picking that up, and she's going to struggle with that same thing, and that's going to just be passed on generation to generation. So it is so important that each and every one of us look at our past trauma, look at our past wounds, so that we don't continue to take that, you know, with us. It's about forgiveness. You know, that's a big piece of what we focused on at the retreat, is really about learning to, you know, forgive everyone for everything. You know, we have to forgive our parents for maybe doing what they knew was best at that time, maybe even if it wasn't what we needed. You know, we have to forgive our siblings. You know, we have to forgive any romantic relationships that we've had, because we're carrying those wounds to new relationships. We have to forgive our relationships with children, you know, our friends, relationship with other women, with other men, it's really about, you know, really taking the time.
It's about transforming our lives. And Janet, I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate you calling in. I did tell my sponsors that you were going to be calling in, and they thought it was a wonderful thing, because right now in our nation too, we need people like you to help us to heal, not just as moms and parents, but as a nation as well. So thank you. I'll have Ellen put your website on my website, and I will talk to you privately after the show. I appreciate you.
Perfect. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores, and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on the day, the 2 days after my daughter's wedding. I'm amazed that I still have a voice. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And I forgot to tell my listeners that my lovely daughter Jasmine got married on Saturday to Talbot Allen, who was in the U.S. Army, and he's now making good use of the GI Bill, and he's getting his bachelor's degree and probably going to law enforcement. Jasmine is working with a firm in Orlando, Florida, and she's on her way to France for her honeymoon. We dined and wined with her, and she did tell me to not talk too much, but I did. And we danced, we ate good food, and she looked lovely. And I want to say, you know, oftentimes you hear people say, if there's a wedding, they'll say, well, I'm coming for the reception, but I'm not sure I'll be there in time for the actual ceremony. And I'm one of those people that believe you ought to be there for the ceremonies, because when you watch other people renew their vows, inside of you, you're renewing your own vows as well. Because I think it's so positive that if a husband and wife is having an issue and they're struggling and there's a challenge going on in their marriage or something, if you sit down and you actually listen to the officiant or the priest or whoever is up there talking to the couple, you kind of say, well, you know, I did that at one time. What happened? Maybe you could straighten up your life a little bit, because the officiant talked about Jasmine and Talbot meeting in high school. And he went off into the army and he painted this story for us, this picture of these young kids, this little Indian girl and this little blonde and blue-eyed boy, that he went off to the army. She went off to UF. Then he returned. She went to law school at the University of Virginia, and he went with her. And now they're getting married. So it was really beautiful. And so I'm surprised I'm here. I thought I would call in sick today, but I'm here. So anyways, but talking about sick, what is the health of the lagoon, the Indian River Lagoon? The lagoon can't call in sick. That's why we have Dr. Lisa Soto here with us today from the Marine Resource Council. So tell us about a lagoon. What's going on?
I love this segue.
Yes.
Thank you for that. So the Marine Resources Council, last time I was on the show, and I appreciate you always inviting us to come back. The last time I was on, we were talking about doing a health assessment.
Right.
You remember?
Yes.
Well, we finished it last year. So if you can go to our website, savetheirl.org, you can see 20 years of data and, you know, the condition of the lagoon in terms of the pollution that's in it and the seagrasses that we know are gone. So we've completed our health assessment. The data ended in 2016, and 2016 was one of the worst years on record. So we think looking at 20 years of data, we've seen the culmination in the decline of the lagoon. We're hoping that culminated in the worst possible situation in 2016. And we're working on this year's report right now. We're hoping that 2017, we're going to see things maybe get a little better than what they
clearer.
Were in 20,
we want a clearer
2016.
View.
Are there any signs of the seagrass coming back?
There's what we have out there now is a different organism living on the bottom. It's actually a macroalgae. It's called Caulerpa prolifera. It's not seagrass. It's not a true plant. It's an algae. It's a native species, and it's coming back. It provides some habitat. It's not the base of the food chain the way seagrass is.
Yeah.
It's happened in the past. This Caulerpa, this macroalgae growing on the bottom, if the seagrass comes back, it will shift it. It'll move the Caulerpa out of the way. But for now, we're not really seeing seagrasses coming back. What we're seeing is this macroalgae getting established. So this is it's a natural occurrence. It's happened before. It's, you know, it's happening again because the seagrasses are gone and there's that space on the bottom that can be occupied by a different species.
Right.
But we're just not really sure what that's going to do to the condition, long-term condition of the lagoon. So where we are in terms of the lagoon, the estuary health is, you know, we think we may have hit rock bottom. We think we might have flipped the system in a way that it might turn into something different than what we're used to and what we like, which is sports fish and fisheries and shellfish and things that we can eat out of the lagoon and being able to swim in it. So we know it's going to take a long time to flip it back. So we think, you know, 50 years worth of damage has caused it to go into almost like a different state. It's in a different health state. And to get it back to the condition that we would like it to be as a community, which is one we can enjoy this estuary, is going to take a long time.
Yeah, somebody was saying it will take about 10 years. I said, oh gosh, I hope not. I hope it'll be 5, maybe less.
I hope it'll be 5,
like,
too.
Yeah, me, you know? But, you know, you've been doing, so for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends out here on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7, and AM 1510, WWBC. I love our dial. It's beautiful. So Dr. Lisa Soto is the executive director at the Marine Resource Council, and you've been doing a lot of educational workshops and giving so many people here in Melbourne and all of our state of Florida an opportunity to learn about the lagoon through better yard maintenance, fertilizer practicing, rain barrel workshops, and all the grass clippings and stuff. So you're leaving your comfort zone of being in the lagoon house and you're doing all these things. How can one get involved to learn all this?
You know, there's so many ways to get involved. And we were talking earlier and I said that, you know, the greatest part of this job is getting to engage our community
right.
in saving our estuary. So at MRC, we do science, we do citizen engagement and scientific exploration, we do restoration work, and we do education. So you can volunteer for just about anything you want to do. If you want to go into the classroom and teach young people, we can train you how to do that. If you want to go out and collect scientific data on the lagoon, we're doing muck mapping right now so that the county can remove the muck on the bottom. We're engaging people in that. If you want to monitor lagoon water quality, we've got people doing that. If you want to get involved in our summer camp, you know, and be a camp counselor, some of the high school students come and volunteer in the summer. We've got a 9 to 11-year-old summer camp that will be kicking off June 10th and June 24th, so next month. Get your kids into summer camp or come and volunteer to be a counselor with summer camp. Anything, we've got artists painting rain barrels for us. So, you know,
yeah.
Anything you do, we can figure out a way to engage you in the lagoon restoration or education or citizen scientific data collection. I mean, we were talking about, you know, the rainy season starting right now. So that's why MRC has been so involved in trying to teach people about fertilizer and lawn care. Because when it starts to rain, everything is going to flow off the lawn, right down the storm drain, or flow through the lawn, through the the sand, which is what everybody's yard is pretty much on top of, and right into our groundwater. So anything you're applying to your lawn before a rain event, and it started raining.
Yeah, you make all of us think. You really do, because I've been turning lights off with people in the rooms. I've been watching what the maintenance guy put on my lawn at home and at work. Because, you know, the Marine Resource Council, you guys are such great advocates for Lagoon, teaching all of us about restoration and the preservation and what we can do. And you've educated so many of us that now we are getting involved. The community is getting involved. And it's great to see so many politicians getting involved here in a Lagoon as well. I mean, what else can we do to teach the public? What other tips can you give us to reduce pollution?
Okay, well, the one thing I've been kind of hammering this spring is to disconnect your lawn. Stop applying all of those chemicals to it, period, and see what happens. So have a conversation with your lawn care professional and tell him or her to stop applying so much fertilizer or just apply it once a year. Try that. I'm just going to apply fertilizer once a year. It needs to be slow release. Do it before June 1st, and that's the only fertilizer.
And talk to the homeowners association to send us these nasty letters. And that wants lawns to be green all the time. But with that comes a price. You have to know what's going on the lawn.
And if you want to develop a Florida-friendly lawn, you can do that. And Keep Brevard Beautiful will actually give you a plaque to put in your garden to say it's Florida-friendly. And then you'll be doing the most you can. You won't be putting on any fertilizer. And it's surprising what will grow on your lawn. And sometimes it can be beautiful.
Absolutely. Lagoon-friendly lawn at Keep Brevard Beautiful. So they'll come out and help you with that. That's a great idea. But it is true that if you disconnect your lawn from the chemicals that are keeping it alive, it might stay alive. I mean, there's a lot of nitrogen that's raining out of the sky in the rainy season. If you're at an HOA, a lot of the homeowners associations have reclaimed water. It's wastewater. The bacteria's been taken out of it, but the nitrogen and phosphorus have not been taken out of it. So that reclaimed irrigation water is pretty much like fertigation. It's like fertilizer and irrigation water combined.
Yes.
So if you're getting that, you don't need to pay additional for nitrogen on your lawn.
All right.
So, you know, the landscape is a huge thing. You know, people are like, oh, that's a little thing. What else? And I'm like, it's not a little thing. It's all of our houses. It's every, you know, it's tens of millions of acres in the country that are all getting chemicals that are all running off into water.
So, Lisa, what about municipalities? Are there any that are still dumping wastewater into the lagoon?
As far as I know, all the municipalities have the capability of dumping wastewater into the lagoon if they have to. So the Indian River Lagoon Act that MRC and this community passed back in 1991 required that wastewater treatment facilities not dump untreated sewage into the lagoon. That was in 1991. So from 1940 to 1991, all of our sewage was going into the lagoon untreated.
It makes you want to cry for the lagoon. It makes you want to paint a barrel with tears.
So we've come a long way, okay?
Yeah.
So we used to just billions of gallons a day were being dumped untreated sewage into the lagoon. So when they passed the Indian River Lagoon Act and said you can no longer do that, they gave the municipalities 5 years to upgrade all of their wastewater treatment facilities to treat the sewage and find another place to dispose of it. As part of that Indian River Lagoon Act, there's a loophole. Of course, you know how it works in Tallahassee. There's a loophole that says if there's a heavy rain event, you're allowed to have a wet weather discharge. So what happens every time it rains is all that water goes through the sand into the groundwater. The groundwater gets higher. It reaches pipes that are underground. Those pipes have cracks in them, and the water goes inside the pipes. And when the water goes inside the pipes, it fills up the wastewater treatment facility, backs up, almost like your house can back up. And when the wastewater treatment facility backs up, they have to release the water, and they release it into the lagoon. So that's a public health issue. It has allowed municipalities to not have to deal with their infrastructure because they've always had these allowances as part of their permit. The good thing that's happened recently, I guess, is we got a hurricane last year. There was a huge wastewater discharge in the Satellite Beach, Indian Harbor Beach area.
Yeah, we all saw that. Oh.
The public became aware of it and started yelling and screaming.
Why does the public have to have red eye and see that kind of stuff coming up when you walk and you see the sludge on the road before the public actually acts?
Before the politics
before the public
that's a great question.
Before the public and the politics act. Because It's like nobody does anything until we see the dead fish and the pictures of all the dead fish.
Yes.
They don't do anything on their eyes get red and it's watery and they have to go spend some money to get some eye drops. And now in Satellite Beach, we saw what was happening on Jackson Avenue. My God, it was horrible, all that brown water coming up. It was really bad.
So that was permitted. I mean, that was a wet weather event that would have allowed that discharge to occur. So what needs to happen is the wastewater infrastructure needs to get fixed. And we know that. And there are a lot of people right now who are saying we should use our Brevard County passed the Save Our Indian River Lagoon tax. We all voted to tax ourselves in this county, which was unprecedented because our community cares so much about this lagoon. So the plan for that money is all being used to do projects that can directly impact the lagoon's health in a positive way that don't have funding sources already designated for them. Mm-hmm. So this wastewater discharge, wastewater has a utility fee. So it's got its own funding source. It's collecting its own hundreds of millions of dollars that really we're already paying. You know, Brevard County residents are already paying for the wastewater fees if we're in the sewer system. Those fees are what needs to go to retrofit our wastewater failing infrastructure, not the Save Our Lagoon tax. The Save Our Lagoon tax needs to fix everything else.
Yeah, and
the
stormwater project. We have a lot of citizens who are watching to make sure that those funds are not misappropriated.
That's right. And if you want to, if you have concerns about the Save Our Indian River Lagoon tax, go to the Citizens Oversight Committee meetings. They're the third Friday of every month at Navarra Government Center. In Building C, you can go and watch as a member of the public. You can speak as a member of the public. You can hear how they're making their decisions and how that decision-making process is going on. Marine Resources Council is there every month. We've got our eyeballs on that Citizens Oversight Committee to make sure that they're using the tax for its intended use. You know, we have been burned in Florida before by taxes that were collected and not used for their intended purpose.
Yeah, so we could do a whole show on the Sadowski Fund and the affordable and unaffordable housing market. We could do a show on that. But anyway, so go ahead. But, you know, one of the things that people talk about a lot, when every time you hear about the Indian River Lagoon, they talk about septic tanks. What's happening right now with Brevard County, Florida, and our septic tanks?
Well, that's a great question, Sita. We're Marine Resources Council is working with Applied Ecology, and we're working with Brevard County to better understand to what extent different wastewater infrastructure is polluting. So the county wants to know, if we remove these septic tanks, if we hook this community up to sewer,
yes,
and we remove these septic tanks, how much less pollution, how cleaner is the water going to be in the groundwater that's going into the lagoon? So we're doing a study to help answer that question. If we remove the septic tanks, how much cleaner is the water going to be? To understand that, we had to investigate a sewered community to compare it with, and a sewered community that has sewer lines and reclaimed water to compare it, and just a natural area to figure out what's the natural background concentrations of bacteria and nitrogen and phosphorus look like. And what we found was really surprising. So we expected, like everybody, that the septic communities were going to be way more polluting. We thought, oh, the septic tanks are the problem. We need to take out the septic tanks. What we found that the septic tank communities were just as polluted as the reclaimed communities. So the people who are on sewer, who also have reclaimed water for irrigation, have nitrogen and bacteria concentrations in their groundwater just as high as the septic tank communities.
So what's the fix, Lisa?
So what is so challenging about this finding is that reclaimed water has been the kind of environmental, you know, water that this was supposed to be
the guru of water
for protecting our potable water sources. Was we don't have to use potable water for irrigation, we can use this reclaimed water for irrigation. But what they've allowed, again at the state level with non-regulation, is that the permitted allowances of what they can spray all over in everybody's irrigated water have gotten higher and higher and higher. So one community might be spraying 28 parts per million nitrogen, and another one might be spraying 3. So obviously, the 28 is putting all this pollution on, and the drinking water standard is 10, by the way, just so you get an idea. So they're spraying 3 times the drinking water standard of nitrogen on everybody's lawns. So those signs like do not drink, do not touch, do not do anything with your reclaimed water, there's a good reason for that. But that reclaimed is an issue that needs to be dealt with. We can't just assume that we can hook septic tanks up to sanitary if that sanitary line is going to a wastewater treatment facility that's just going to spray the discharge water out in reclaimed lines all over the place. It's not an easy fix. And that's what we were talking earlier, Joe and I were talking about, like, what is the one thing people can do? What's the one thing? It's like almost 1,000 points of light. There's so many things that when you start digging, even into something like, can we just switch septic tanks to sewer? We're like, oh, it depends. Are those sewer lines leaking?
You have to fix other things too before you could fix that. Because, you know, there was one time I was saying, well, you know, we always have money to give to other countries, which some countries do need it. We always have money for war. We always have money for other things. Why don't we have money to just go to every house and say, hey, we'd like to hook you up to the sewer? But now there's additional costs and additional studies to be done before we could do that now, what you're saying.
Yeah, but actually, I'm glad you brought that up because there is a small grant going on right now, I think in the Satellite Beach area, where your lateral line, the line that if you're hooked up to sewer, the line that goes from your house to the street is your personal responsibility. It's your property. That's your line. And those are the ones that are leaking the worst. And right now, the city of Satellite Beach is offering to replace those lines for free and with a grant that they got through the county.
And I bet you some people are going to push back.
People are saying no.
Because they don't want to mess up their lawn.
I'm like, go to Melbourne. Yeah. I'll do it. I'll have my line replaced for free. That's, you know, we definitely need to do it. I mean, these lateral lines, some of them were made out of what they call orange
copper?
Orange board, something. It's like a clay that's all disintegrating in water and Orangeburg pipe, but it's like a clay. And those are just, they're just disintegrated. So these lateral lines need to be replaced with hard PVC, you know, something that's...
They need an upgrade.
They need to
upgrade. And people should not buck the system. If you could help, why not? So if someone wants to donate to MRC or they want to become a volunteer or find an event, give us a website.
Thank you. Yes. Marine Resources Council, we're located at the Lagoon House in Palm Bay, about a mile south of the Melbourne Causeway. Our website is savetheirl.org. Love to have you get involved with our organization. Our next brown bag lunch, we have a brown bag the first Tuesday of every month, and tomorrow's is the Vieira Company. The president of the Vieira Company is speaking at our brown bag. The brown bag will start at noon. It's at the Ted Moorhead Lagoon House, 3175 Dixie Highway, Northwest.
Well, and I like that you guys, not only do you have the brown bag lunches, but, you know, you do have a lot of education going on there. You teach people about restoration, science, going green, youth involvement, the Lagoon Watch, and you have muck finders, too. Where do you find people to become muck finders?
They find us. We just have to put out a call and people line up. We're doing muck finders is going out on the boat. So a lot of people like to go out on the boats. And then we use this very long measuring device to figure out what the depth of muck is.
So they can have fun on their boat while they're a muck finder.
Yes, and then we map the muck and we come up with volumes. Muck is a pollutant.
It is.
So the lagoon is never going to recover as long as it's there. So we do need to get the muck out.
Yeah, and I like what the Marine Resource Council and Dr. Lisa Soto has done too. You know, so many people were depending on the lagoon for not just health, but also that's it. Tourism as far as well as fishing, restaurants, people eat the product from it. So when you guys are going to, you tell the community, listen, if you're going to eat the fish, if you're going to eat crabs, if you're going to shrimp, think about all these things. The muck thinks what's going on in the lagoon. And you've opened up so many people's eyes as to, you know, the health and well-being, not just of themselves, but of the lagoon as well.
Thank you. Yeah, we try to get people engaged. So it's more than just a one-time conversation. You know, we try to have a meaningful conversation and then say, how can we get you involved with our organization? So like I said, we have so many volunteer opportunities.
I know our friend Keith Winston, the executive director of the zoo, they're also doing a lot of stuff with the lagoon as well. And I know you were doing the oyster bed restoration as well.
Yeah, we're doing an oyster reef at the Lagoon House.
Right. So tell us a little bit about it. I think we still have, Pastor Paul, do we have a little more time there? We got 4 minutes. And I know that's wonderful. Two questions I had before 4 minutes. Somebody wanted to know about the oyster restoration that you're doing. Because I know a lot of people are doing it in there, in Tortoise Island and Lansing Island as well. They're doing that. But one lady wanted me for you to expand a little bit about groundwater.
Okay.
If you could expand a little bit about that. I don't think a lot of people understand that term. They hear it a lot, but they don't understand exactly what that is. And that is like the brunt of what we're talking about today.
Yeah, well, it was surprising to everybody, I think, when we realized how polluted the groundwater was. You know, we kind of did this study to try to better understand the modeling of pollution that's going into the lagoon. And there's an assumption, and there's a lot of efforts on reducing the stormwater. So when it rains, everything that you see flowing down the street into the storm drain is untreated. That's the stormwater. Whatever percolates through the soil and contributes to the aquifer that we drink out of is the groundwater. So under the ground, and if you live, depending on where you live, the groundwater might be like 11 inches down. Or it might be 6 feet, or might be, I mean.
We could do a whole show on groundwater. I find this fascinating. I really do. So,
but it's sandy, so especially out on the barrier island, everything is sandy, so nothing really attaches or adheres. It just seeps right through the sand, right into groundwater as a pollutant that's untreated. So when, you know, unfortunately, things like brown fields, you know, where there's been toxic waste that's been stored somewhere and it's leaked, it ends up in the groundwater, it's a problem. We need to get it out. Fertilizers are just going right through the sand into groundwater and contributing to nitrogen and phosphorus concentrations in groundwater. Those are a problem to get out. So what we're just really starting to investigate now is the extent that groundwater is seeping into the lagoon, and what is it going to take to affect really a change in the groundwater pollution.
So it's all about changing our behaviors and know what we're doing. All of us, every single person, not just say we're going to recycle when we see it on the truck of the big green truck driving by, but take personal responsibility in your homes.
Exactly.
For what you,
yeah,
what you eat, what you do, how you think, and how it affects the lagoon, and not just the lagoon, but the environment for generations to come, right? So tell us quick about the oyster restoration program.
So the oysters are a zoo program, so I don't have any data on it.
Yeah.
But the, you know, what they've been doing is building the cages and hanging them from people's docks.
Yes.
And then they put out some reefs, and they have been hopefully collecting some scientific data on...
Just to build up the shorelines, right?
The viability of whether these oysters are going to survive or not.
Oysters are filter feeders, so they can take a lot of the pollution out of the lagoon.
That's right.
As well.
Right. Yeah, everything pretty much is. So the so they're putting in reefs along shorelines, both to try to break up energy and to do some filtration and try to increase the filter feeders in the lagoon. And then trying to restore the native plants along the shoreline with mangroves and so on.
Yeah, so. We love what you guys do. You know, so policy driven, and you also take a lot of action with science. And it's so great to have people that actually have the facts so when they tell us something, we can understand, because it's truth. I don't understand the people that actually see the facts, know what the science says, and then they say, well, I don't believe it. How do we get more people to say, hey, I am going to pay more attention to the lagoon? Because whether you believe in science or not, these things have happened. Global warming has happened. Pollution is happening. We all need to pay attention. What do you say to the naysayers with the last minute we have? How do we get them to actually believe these things are happening?
Yeah, I think in some cases, seeing is believing, right?
Right.
So they, you know, in regards to global warming and climate change, it's not until there's an octopus in your garage that people are going to say, oh, maybe there is some sea level rise happening. So I think, you know, again, going back to what you said earlier, you know, why did a fish kill have to happen for this to happen? Sometimes that needs to happen. That the catastrophic event is what finally makes people pay attention. So.
And you said the next event is when? Before we leave, we have 15 minutes on air. The next 15 seconds. Oh, gee, I wish I had 15 minutes. I love talking to her. So for our listeners who tuned in today, we had Dr. Lisa Soto. We had Janet Garcia. Joe Shim, thank you for being here with us. And a date again for the next brown bag lunch?
Tomorrow at noon.
Tomorrow
Tuesday.
At noon. We got it in. Yeah.